Hello, hello. Welcome to Season 4 of the Chicago Techies Podcast, the show that highlights the voices of Chicago innovators and their journeys. This season, we're shining a spotlight on founders, from bootstrap beginnings to bold visions. We're diving into what it really takes to build right here in Chicago. I'm your host, Cecilia Benitez. Thanks for tuning in. Hey, Sam, thank you for joining me on this week's episode of the Chicago Techies Podcast. How are you? I'm excited. This is actually the season finale. Spoiler alert.
Super cool. I'm pumped. Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here. This is my first formal podcast recording. I'm really excited.
Let's kick things off and help our listeners get to know you a little bit. So let's start with your name, your pronouns, where you're from, if not Chicago, and your current role.
Yeah, of course. So my name's Sam Burke. Pronouns are he, him. I'm actually from, I say I'm from Chicago, but I get a lot of flack for that because technically I'm from the Chicago suburbs. I grew up in a really small town called Itasca. I'm not sure if you've heard of it. It's like,
I have. It counts.
Oh, you have?
It counts. You're in Chicago now.
Yeah, I'm in Chicago now, right? And yeah, so I grew up in the burbs all my life, and then I went to school out in Colorado for 5 years. Tried to do a little stint in New York right after school, but ended up getting a really great job back in the city, about 5 months after graduating. And so now I'm here, and I love Chicago. It's beautiful.
Let's dive right in. I love to hear more about the story behind your company. Is it Hail?
It's Hail. Yeah.
Hail. So what inspired you to start Hail? Like, why focus specifically on men's personal care and grooming as you'll go into it?
Totally. So just real quick background on what Hail is, just in a really general sense. Essentially, what we're trying to build is a Sephora for men with a guided shopping experience. So think of a platform that aggregates all of the top class cosmetic products that serve different diverse niche audiences, all being aggregated into one central platform that helps users sort through what they should and shouldn't be buying, for their skin and their hair. So it's kind of an interesting take on a notoriously difficult space. I think you think about men's care and cosmetics as being this really diluted market, and it is, and I can get into that. But the inspiration from this kind of came from a weird experience that I had early on in college, which was this change in my perspective of masculinity. And we went to school in Colorado, and I went out to go visit a cousin of mine. He's also, a good friend of mine. His name's Max. He lives out in New York. And I remember, I was staying in his apartment with his roommates, and this is a Saturday, we're about to go shopping, and he's like, okay, let's go get ready, and we're going to hit the town. And I was like, great. And, me being from Colorado, 19, 20-year-old kid, I just tossed on a hoodie and some sweatpants, and I was like, all right, I'm ready to go. Let's go. And all of his roommates and him were bopping in and out of their rooms. They were putting different shoes on. Max would come out and he'd be I like those moccasins, but I know you have these Oasis sneakers that look way better. I would change that out. Or, hey, I know you have a brown cardigan that looks better with that black t-shirt. Put that on. And they were sort of course correcting each other's outfits before we were going shopping. And I was like, what is this? I've never experienced hetero dudes having this sort of complex around putting together each other's outfits before them as a group would go out into the city. And it was kind of cool, but it was it made me feel a little bit insecure about myself and how I was dressing myself. So that was the first thing that challenged my perspective of masculinity. And then weirdly enough, we ended up going shopping for personal care products. When we were out there, they were refilling their toiletry cabinet. So face scrubs and hair products and stuff. And, I was somebody who suffered from pretty bad acne when I was in high school, and I had terrible hair. And I remember the first store that we walked into was Aesop. And you walk in and there's hundreds of bottles on the wall, and all, dozens and dozens of products. And it's very intimidating. And I remember walking in and being like, oh my God, I could probably use a lot of these products. A lot of these would probably be really good for my skin, help clear it up, even skin tone, that sort of thing. But I didn't even know where to start. And I didn't really want to ask for help because I didn't want to admit to myself and people around me that I didn't know what I was doing. Right.
Yeah.
So it felt very uncomfortable. And then I remember that, okay, now we're going to look for hair stuff. So we'd leave Aesop and we would go over to Mailin and Gates and we'd look at hair stuff. And it would be the same experience where I would just be overwhelmed when I'd walk in. And then we would bop into Rode. And I remember just to put together all the things that they were, using in their care routines, we would have to go store to store to store. And it was a really disjointed experience. I didn't understand why, a dude had to literally, if you weren't shopping online, go shop to shop to shop just to put together what I would consider to be a simple 4 or 5 product routine. And then you think about what we have, you know, women have traditionally at like Sephora and Ulta, where you have this shop where you can kind of show up, and there's estheticians who are there who can like learn about what you're already using, learn about what your goals are, and then help guide you to the right products in the store that they think that you should be using. And they're all the best brands in the world. They're not Ulta's brand. They're not Sephora's brand. They're brand agnostic. They're the best brands that are coming out in the cosmetic space for women. So I was like, well, why doesn't this experience exist for men? And that was like, that was a long time ago. That was probably like four or five years ago. And I remember that started to develop this routine of mine in college, where I started to have like a more robust skincare routine. Like I had like a 4 or 5 step thing that I would run through every single day. And I started to have a more robust hair routine. My hair got better. My skin got better. And then that, you know, leads to this concept of hail, right? When we get into, you know, kind of what we're building, I think we'll, you know, understand that the important thing for us to emphasize is our ability to build a brand. And when we think about Hale's brand persona, you know, we're trying to build it around this concept of what I would call like a cool friend, right? So somebody who's like, yeah, not a know-it-all, not super like arrogant about like, oh, well, I know more about you than this. Like I'm somehow better because I have all these routine elements. This cool friend is more of somebody who like, they're well-dressed, they're nonchalant, they don't talk about it. But if you were like to go ask them and approach them, be like, hey, what do you use for your hair? What would you recommend that I use for my skin? They would be able to point you in the right direction and like make you feel comfortable having that dialogue with them. And that's the brand that we try to emulate in Hale, is that cool friend. And I'll say that later in college, because of that experience that I had with my cousin, I don't want to say that I was like the cool friend, because I was not cool, but I was the friend that would help you know, my friends figure out what they should be using for their hair and for their skin, because I was often asked. And that's kind of the same service that I'd like to provide for men at large on a platform.
I mean, and you kind of just answered my next question. No, it's okay, because it sounds like you're building something different, right? Like this is, you're targeting something different. You're being more intentional about what you're building. So yeah. I guess in your own words, like, you know, what do you think other companies haven't been able to address?
So I think when you look at the men's personal care space, the other reason that this is interesting is because, you know, if you exclude makeup, which is a massive caveat to this statement, in some sectors, there's a LendingTree study that came out that suggests that men have started outspending women in personal care over the last 5 years by almost 76%. When you think about like hair care, male grooming, skin care, those sorts of things. And a lot of that is happening online because men are a little bit nervous and too insecure and don't want to admit, they're too proud. They don't want to go admit that they don't know how to take care of themselves in a store in public because they feel a little embarrassed. So they turn to online to start shopping. And I think what people are missing is this element of education and discovery of like high quality products that are actually meant for people like them. You know, if you go to Amazon and you look up like a cleanser, or you look up a moisturizer, or you look up a hair care product, you're going to see the top five brands that you've seen for the last decade. And a lot of those brands are generic solutions that only, you know, work for like a generic like white person. You know, essentially they're not meant for diverse people and with diverse backgrounds. And I think helping people with that, with the discovery process of finding products that are meant for them, is special. But then I think that, you know, when it comes to the entire industry of men's personal care as a whole, you kind of are, you know, traditionally we have a really high CAC. And I think it's because you're asking men to go down this purchasing journey that is like a little bit unnatural and not well trusted. Like if you think about it, you're asking somebody to go and make what I call like a high trust purchase in a low trust environment. Mm-hmm. Right. High trust purchase being like you are asking them to buy a product from you that will change the way that they look and appear in public, which is a big deal, right? People care about how they show up. And that high trust purchase, you're asking them to make on your native platform where you're pushing tons of your own marketing, tons of your own rhetoric to try to get them to buy these products, regardless of whether or not you think that's the best product for them, right? And you're aware of this, the brand, you know, the brand is aware of this, the consumer is aware of this, right? So it creates this like low trust, skeptical environment that you're now asking these people to put their money into. And I think that that's the problem, right? Because you have all of these brands diluting the space who are all pushing similar messaging, all trying to capture some slice of the pie. And you know, naturally CAC goes up because people are spending less on these new sites with new names that are popping up. So I think what we're trying to do is say, well, you know, we don't think that we can make a better product than what currently exists in the market. Like, there's a lot of really, really awesome brands that are started by founders who are very mission driven, who are making products specifically for specific problems that, you know, individual people are facing. And I find that a lot of them typically get trapped in whatever city that they start in. So whether if they start in LA, if they start in Chicago, if they start in New York, they're what I call like regionally gridlocked. And are unable to be discovered on a national scale. And so I think if we do that search and we find all of these brands who are making all these great products, aggregate them onto one site and make it really easy for users to understand, you know, what they should and shouldn't be looking at, what they should and shouldn't be spending their money at, then we can change that journey from a high trust purchase in a low trust environment to a high trust purchase in a high trust environment.
No, that's a great point. I'm curious, has it been challenging trying to find some of these brands or like, you know, in general?
At first it was before we like officially had launched the site. But over the last 3 weeks, we've received an incredible amount of inbound, which has been awesome. So now we have a lot of really niche brands making really cool products that are reaching out to us looking for an extra distribution route. But you know, we do have a pretty rigorous filtering process that we like to go through.
Yeah, I'm curious about that. Do you test it out with your community before? Or
exactly.
What's the process?
We test out all the products ourselves. So typically they'll ship us a bunch of samples of all the SKUs that they want carried. We'll use them. We'll pass them out to the people who we have on our team or who are in a network who they're intended for and have them, you know, trial it for a week or 2 weeks and just see what the effects are. And then we also do is we take a look at the ingredients that they have and the concentrations of those ingredients in their products and run it through a platform called Potion AI, which essentially allows you to analyze the ingredients, and it'll tell you on a per ingredient basis what the intended positive outcomes of those ingredients are and what the potential negative side effects are. So then we can use, you know, that breakdown to weigh it against information that we intake about our users to say, okay, well, these products with these ingredients are more well suited for somebody like you, or you know, these products, you know, may cause a negative side effect, like, you know, acne breakouts or like frizzy hair or dry hair that you might not want. And that's kind of how we judge whether or not, you know, does the product do what they say that it's going to do? And, you know, is it good to use for users? Does it have high quality ingredients that actually like, effectuate what they're looking for?
Yeah, that's fair. Now let's transition a little bit to the founding journey here, the funding journey. So obviously before like founders go in on a product, there's a phase of testing the idea, right? You know, whatever smart, scrappy ways. Like, what has been your strategy for validating this concept before you actually committed and for the full product and the platform build?
Totally. So it kind of goes a little bit into my background too, because I decided to go full time with this a few months ago. But I used to be, you know, before I started Hill, I was the chief of staff and first hire at Pi, which is a tech company in Chicago that focuses on bringing IRL communities together. And I was working under Andy Dunn, who's the former founder of Bonobos, who's our first investor in this platform. But before I brought this concept to him and pitched him, you know, I had the idea probably even, I think back in February of 2025. And the initial validation started with a survey that I pushed out to second and third degree male connections that I had, just kind of getting a pulse for how they were shopping, what kinds of products they were shopping for, what that experience felt like for them, if it felt disjointed, and then if they would make use of a support for men like platform. And that survey came back with overwhelming positive data. You know, 86% of men that we surveyed signaled that they would be interested in a platform that aggregated, you know, the top male products for them to shop from. And that was a really strong signal for us to go ahead and build a test platform. So I hired these two just, you know, college kids from Ohio State who knew how to build up a tech platform. I didn't have a whole lot of time to build, but I had enough time to help them design. So we put something together where, you know, you couldn't actually check out and collect payment, but you could allow users to attempt to check out. So we would list all the products, and then those products would like send the user to the native sites of those, you know, of those products, so they could check out on their native platform. And then we were getting, you know, signal that we could convert at over, you know, 3.5% of all, you know, traffic that we were getting on the platform, which was really great for us. It's higher than the conversion rate for our partner brands on their native sites, which is sometimes under 1%, which is pretty incredible. So that was like the first early signal was we got 500 people to use that test platform organically. We had a conversion rate to purchase or to attempt to purchase of about 3.5%. So that's when I decided to go ahead and pitch this concept to Andy and see if he'd be interested in angel investing. And it turned out he was, and he wrote a first check.
That's actually the next question. Like, what has been your experience, you know, talking to early investors, mentors, or just potential strategic partners at this stage?
Yeah. So I think I had to figure out what the long-term story looked like. And I think we broke it down into a pretty simple, like three-step journey that sort of like sets into place all of these validation checkpoints for us to like thumbs up the next fundraising round. And so, you know, with this initial fundraising round, we did a little under $250,000 for what I call friends and family. We did that from Andy, who's, you know, previous founder of Bonobos, CEO of I right now. We did that from Sandy Cass, who runs Red Swan Ventures. And then we did it from, you know, another angel in Chicago. Her name's Marina Dennis Gallagher. She was ex-Lightbank, ex-Cameo, ex-Feastables. And essentially with this, you know, friends and family round, our goal is to kind of put together the team, you know, launch our platform and say, hey, can we be effective at selling products to guys? Right. Mm-hmm. Like, just like, are we able to launch something, get our marketing and our messaging right, get attention, and can we just start selling products to men at a reasonably high rate? Right. And if we look good on that front, which we're looking, you know, pretty good off of the first launch so far, then that kind of green lights our pre-seed round, which we're just starting. And in this pre-seed round, we're looking to, you know, raise about $1 to $1.1 million, you know, fully lock in the team that we have, which is about half full-time, half part-time right now. And then figure out, like, okay, well, now that we know that we're effective at selling products to dudes, can we get them to subscribe and then start to, like, bundle and save?
Yeah.
And so, you know, we want recurring revenue, we want retention, we want us and Hale and our platform to be the go-to spot for men to be purchasing their personal care products. And so if we're the go-to platform, it would make sense that people were spending with us on a recurring basis. So, you know, this pre-seed round is going to be used to, you know, try to build a loyal customer base that is either subscribing to products or is consistently using us to, you know, buy multiple things and then bundle and save across brands, which will be the first site that you can do that on. So,
yeah.
The last stage of our fundraising process would be the seed round, which would come, you know, post this subscription bundling phase, where we would look into getting into what I would call as, like, sort of like the restricted men's cosmetics and men's beauty products, which is like stuff for ED, stuff for hair loss, stuff for weight loss, SKUs that you would see traditionally on platforms like Hims. Like, we would like to get into that space, that regulated space. But we want to prove that we can dominate the unregulated space by selling over-the-counter general cosmetic products first. And then once we validate that process, then we'll, you know, raise even more money to kind of get into this regulated era. We can start selling, you know, prescription or prescription adjacent products.
Yeah, no, that's ambitious. I love that. And do you already have the subscription product available, like, for people, or is that something that's coming next?
So we're actually launching that this weekend. Nice. So it's November 19th right now. So we're pushing a big launch, you know, on Sunday evening, where we're launching the desktop version of our platform, a full overhaul of the site with new branding, which I'm really excited for people to see. And along with that is the subscription, which is kind of the focus of our next 6 months.
What's your monthly revenue in sales right now?
It's low. We just started. We're probably doing, you know, about $2,000 a month. But, you know, it's not too bad for being live for about a month and a half. Yeah,
but there are people that are out there not making any yet. So that's pretty good.
Yeah. we're just revving up, you know, and I'm excited because we're working with a really incredible local Chicago production team to start, you know, getting a lot of great content out on Meta and on Google and Reddit. And so I think people should be seeing a lot more of us in a really clean, cool way soon, which I'm excited about.
Now, zooming out a little bit, when Hale is operating at its full potential, you know, you're thinking long term, like, what do you imagine that success would look like?
I think it starts with getting men comfortable with dialogue around taking care of themselves. I think it's still a really touchy subject that a lot of dudes are too proud to even chat with their friends about. At least it's pretty rare for the younger people. What's nice and what we're starting to see is it's becoming less stigmatized. So what I mean by that is, you know, historically, if you were a guy with, you know, a skincare routine 5-10 years ago, you might be made fun of for being a little more feminine than the average or traditional dude, right? And that's not true anymore. And I think that the reason that that's not true is because you have this population of people who grew up on social media, you know, over the last 10 to 15 years who are now older. People always laugh when I use this term, but I call them like the aging millennial. Right. So this is like somebody, you're right. It's a weird term, but, like, you know, you think about these people who are, like, you know, 34 to, you know, 44, who, you know, grew up over the last 20 years on Facebook, on Instagram, they're still on TikTok, they're still on social media. And, you know, they're used to seeing this, like, beautification of, like, the average person, this, like, this, like, um, uh, this, this, drive and compulsion to want to match this like unrealistic stereotype of beauty. And now this group of people is aging, right? So yeah. They're starting to see their skin get worse, and they're starting to see wrinkles come out, and they're starting to see their hairlines recede, and it's getting gray, and their beard's getting patchier. And now all of a sudden, this group who traditionally didn't care about, you know, their personal cosmetics are now like seeing all of these problems, you know, come to light for themselves. And instead of shopping preventatively like a younger person, they're shopping reactively and proactively, mm-hmm. because these are problems that they're facing right now, and they want solutions for it. So the market is ripe for a tool and a platform and a retailer to help men through this education and this purchasing experience. So what I would like to see long term is essentially like a safe space for guys to go and find products like this, for us to discover, have dialogue, have conversations, figure out what's actually working for us, and figure out how we should be taking care of ourselves as we sort of like age into this new era of masculinity. And I think it starts digitally right now, but I won't lie and say that I'm not interested in occupying physical spaces at some point. Right now we're testing this with a shop and shop experience that we have live in Soho, Manhattan, where we are catering all of the cosmetic lines for this like boutique clothing store for men out in Soho. And so, you know, we have all of our partner brands products out there. We're testing foot traffic, we're looking at the attach rate for sales at that store. We're seeing if we increase, the AOV, you know, with our presence there. And if that goes well, then we'd like to expand the shop and shop experience to other locations in New York, locations in Chicago, and locations in LA, and start testing our ability to acquire customers on foot and getting this extra distribution for our brands. But then eventually, like if all that signals well, I'm really interested in, I mean, maybe this is a given for my time spent at Pi, but I'm really interested in bringing, you know, in-person shopping and community back. Like
Oh, 100%.
I think bricks before clicks is like a big trend right now. Right. And, you know, I spent the last 2 years of my career at Pi building community, working on focusing on getting people back together in IRL spaces. And I mean, I'm 25. I'm a little bit too young to fully remember this experience, but I've, you know, talked a lot with like my parents and, you know, other older friends of mine who lived in this old era of retail where, like, you know, back in the day, if you were to go to a store, a retail center, you know, you were probably going to see the same attendants, the same people working the stores there day in, day out. You'd be familiar faces. They would kind of get to know you a little bit. They'd know what you liked, what you didn't like. And it was more of this like intimate experience, whether you were at like a local grocery store, or whether you were at like a local retail store. Like, it was more of a communal social experience for you to walk in there, talk with the attendant. They knew what you liked. They were able to help guide you. Yeah, the mall. They were able to help guide you to like the right things that you wanted to buy, right? Yeah. And it just felt way more personal. And as things have like commercialized over the last, you know, 15, 20 years, we've kind of lost that sense of community when it comes to shopping, right? There was this big push to start shopping and spending online. And now, like, if you do go shop in person, it's a really uncomfortable, like solo experience where it's not a social experience anymore. It feels very siloed. And I think that as this big movement online starts to drive people back in person, you know, I think that you'll start to see the rise of more high quality retailers. And I would like to dive into that for a second, because this is a little bit of a tangent, but I think it shines a lot of light on what we're working on. And you know, you look at this big push of people going online to start shopping, and you look at where it's rooted in. Shopify, brilliant company, amazing company, right? That when they launched 10 years ago or 15 years ago, they made it incredibly easy for anybody with $5,000 or $10,000 to launch a brand and a company, right? And it was happening in all spaces, right? Hundreds of brands every single year, thousands of brands every single year in the cosmetic space and the food and bev space were launching with these really cool new high quality products that had like interesting takes on traditionally highly commercialized goods, right? So, you know, you look at the food and bev space and you see all these protein snacks coming out and all these like vegan snacks coming out, and you know, walk down the Whole Foods aisle and you see all these like really cool niche, interesting names that you've never seen before making cool snacks, right? Mm-hmm. Same thing with the beauty space. When you look down and you walk through like an Ulta and you walk down even like an all natural, you know, section of like a farmer's market, and you look at all these like products that people are making for people's face, people's hair, that are vegan, that are organic, that are non-animal tested. Like, it's so easy to launch a brand now. And in the men's cosmetic space, particularly, like men's skincare brands, the number of, that have come to market year over year is growing at 112% for the last 3 years, which is crazy. So you have this, you know, push over the last 20 years for people to start shopping online. More and more people are launching companies to try to like diversify this market. And really, it's just diluting this market. And so now you have all of these consumers in every single industry going into what I call like decision fatigue, where there's just so many choices of cool products that you could be buying from that it almost paralyzes you when you're shopping. And you don't even know how to start sorting through what's good, what's not, what's a scam, what's going to help you, right? And then you look at somebody like Whole Foods, which is already doing this. They're sort of like this filter of trust for what the good snacks are. The good, like CPG, small company like Food and Bev Snacks, like they're almost sort of source of truth for people. When you walk in there, you know that Whole Foods has this rigorous filtering process where they only allow the best brands for the food and bev space in to be carried on their shelves. So when you go and you shop with them, it's a highly trusted experience. And I'd like to do the same thing for men's personal care products. You know, we're starting online and we're saying, well, we're going to help cut the scope of all that's available in the digital market down into only what you should be looking at. And then in person, if we can provide that same like high trust retailing space, I think eventually 2 to 3 years from now, that would be the goal.
Yeah. No, I mean, that resonates. I've spent hours at beauty stores trying to decide what might work for me.
Yeah.
And I still leave not really sure if this is going to work or not. But
yeah.
Yeah, definitely appreciate that. I wanna switch gears to talk a little bit about Chicago and you building here and what that means, yeah. Right? Like, I think Chicago is such a great city to build out of, and there's a great startup community here that can support you. So yeah. What has been, you know, influential, I guess, in your journey? And are you talking to mentors here, supporters? Like, what's Chicago been like for you?
Totally. Chicago has been extremely kind, I think. Like anybody who has been to the city and has been woven into our, you know, startup founder ecosystem out here knows how intimate and helpful and caring everybody in the community is. That being said, it is pretty small. I will say, like, I had a little bit of an unfair start when it comes to like weaving myself into the community. You know, I got involved with the Chicago tech scene through my mm-hmm. position at Pi, through working with mm-hmm. Andy Dunn, who's like he's a celebrity founder. He's a phenomenal human being. He's like
Bonobos,
a fantastic yeah. mentor to me. Yeah, he started yeah. Bonobos back in the day, sold it to Walmart, wrote a phenomenal book called Burn Rate. If you've never read it, I would suggest reading it. It takes 2 days.
So good.
It's so good. But yeah, like I got to work really, really closely with him. He was my first job out of college. I was his head of biz ops and growth ops, you know, first employee at Pi. And, you know, that was just sort of like an immediate splash into the tech ecosystem mm-hmm. because like that was our, at Pi, like, you know, the techies was our group of early adopters. Those were our first 2,000 people on the platform, right? And so all of the IRL events that we were hosting, you know, to support this new app that we were launching, you know, involved everybody that you can imagine that was, you know, in the startup ecosystem out here, you know, all sorts of interesting folks. And that kind of gave me just sort of this like 0 to 1, like quick start on the who's who of Chicago. And so that was like a really great, just like, you know, immersion therapy, like, hey, here's take a college kid who hadn't had a job before and just place him in these room with all these amazing people doing amazing things. It's really inspiring. And since then, you know, I think there's different groups that do a really great job at making sure that the community stays active. Like, I think Alex Campbell from Bounder House is a really great event series. You know, mm-hmm. you guys with 1 million cups is really incredible. And then, you know, Pi is still up and running and has a lot of really great events for people in the space. So it's a smaller community than you would expect, you know, in New York and SF, but it is a really caring community. We all are super down. It's like that, you know, classic Midwestern nice, right? We're yeah. all down to help each other, which is cool.
Yeah.
I think consumer is a bit interesting in Chicago. That's sort of a new concept for us. Like, traditionally, we like older industries like manufacturing. Mm-hmm. But I think there's this new vibe to Chicago percolating where it's like, maybe it might be cool to have a consumer company here in the next year or two. Who knows? I hope so.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Chicago is pretty small. Almost everybody knows each other and wants to actually genuinely help out and collaborate. Yeah, I mean, we literally met on the street, like just in passing. So
we met going down an elevator. Yeah. Uh-huh. Literally, yeah. It was incredible. So
but for someone in Chicago with like an early stage, you know, idea in consumer products or digital health or like anything really. Yeah. What do you think? Where do you suggest they begin?
Oh, just go start talking to people. Like like whatever idea you think you have or wherever, if you want to work in startups, you want to be an operator, if you want to be a founder, if you want to get into VC, like go to some of the networking events. Again, the community in Chicago is so tight knit that you will meet exactly who you want to meet if you just kind of put yourself out there and start having conversations, which I think is really cool. And you just kind of like, just sort of be non-resistant and sort of just like follow the path of least resistance while you're chatting with people and taking the opportunities that come in front of you. You'll be surprised at how quickly you can grow and achieve cool things.
Yeah.
I think it's just networking.
Yeah, for sure. Good advice. So looking ahead, you know, what are some of the next big milestones for Hail over the next 6 to 12 months or beyond?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're looking to get double digit traffic on the platform consistently month over month, which is sort of our big internal milestone. It's just, you know, can we reach and grow the top of funnel the way that we want it to? And then again, we're looking to kick off, you know, this pre-seed raise that we're working on for 1 to 1.1 million. We have a first check subscribe, which I'm excited about. But, you know, if we can lock that down, you know, solidify these, you know, last 2-3 members of our team who we want to bring on full time, I think we're going to be really well positioned to start tackling a growing but difficult market. And I think it's going to be a pretty fun ride. And I think we're doing some cool stuff that people will be interested in following along with.
And lastly, it really sounds like you're trying to build something meaningful. So I'm curious about your personal advice that you would give to early founders that want to build something that is genuinely looking to improve people's lives. Like, what do you say to them?
I think find the right people. Like, I think there's a million problems that can be solved, right? And I think like men's beauty and is a funny one. I think we're actually focusing more on male confidence. But like any industry, like there's a million different problems and there's a million different ways to solve all of these problems. And I think the only way that you are going to be successful in whatever calls out to you is by surrounding yourself with people who share the same passion for the mission. And so when you're building something, you know, whether you're a solo founder, whether you have a technical founder and you're recruiting new team members, like those first, you know, 3 to 5 to 10 people that you recruit are going to mean all the world's difference to whether or not you succeed. I think there's this really common saying in VC where, you know, people would rather support, a B idea with an A team than an A idea with a B team. Mm-hmm. And that's so true. And, it's all about the people working on the project. And so, you know, if you want to get started in the space and you want to launch your own project, you want to launch your own company, you want to be a founder, I think, again, it comes down to networking, but also making sure that whoever you bring on board is equally as passionate as you are.
Yeah, the team that you're building with is critical, especially when you don't have, if you don't have any income just yet. Like, what investors are going to be looking at is your team, making sure that you have the right people, the experience. You know, that's at the end of the day in the pre-seed stage, venture capitalists or investors are really betting on the founder and their team,
100%,
not necessarily 100%. Always the product. So, anyway. This has been great. Thank you so much for chatting with me. If anyone wants to reach out to you and connect with you, get in touch, maybe learn more about Hail, like where should they go connect with you?
Yeah. Can I just say my email? Is that
weird? That's fine.
Yeah. Feel free to email me at sam@thehail.co. Or you can check out our website and shoot us an email through there. We have a contact page. But yeah, it's our platform is thehail.co. But yeah, this has been really fun. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, anytime. I will post all of these on the show notes too, so that people can just go click and, you know, email you directly. So
cool. Amazing. Yeah. Sweet. And check us out on Instagram too. We're at, this one's a little different, but it's the.hail.co.
Okay. On Instagram. I'll probably add the Instagram and the LinkedIn pages as well so that people can go to it.
Great.
So, sweet.
Amazing.
Thank you so much, Sam. Best of luck with everything. Excited to just to kind of keep an eye on your journey and just see where you take Hail, and you're rooting for you.
Absolutely. Yeah, we have an incredible team and I'm really excited to be working on this project. It's been incredibly fun so far, so I'm excited to see where it goes.
Well, happy holidays. Is it too early to say happy holidays for you and the team already?
I mean, don't know.
We're getting there, man.
We're getting there. It's pretty much there. Yeah.
All right.
Happy holidays.
All right. See you later, Sam.
Cool. All right. I'll see you.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Chicago Techies podcast. If you enjoy listening, don't forget to subscribe, share, and leave a review on iTunes. Let's continue the conversation on social media. We are @ Chicago Techies on all social media platforms. Thank you again, and we'll see you next time.